On this episode of the Bartenders Podcast, Bartenders Jukebox Podcast, I'm going to have Mr. Charlie Eschbach from The Undercoats on. Be sure to check it out. I'm going to have that interview coming up very, very shortly. And like I said in my last podcast, I still want to hear about your summer food, so definitely post them on my Facebook page. Let me know what's going on. Some upcoming people I might will be having on my show. All I can say is stay tuned. I'm not going to let that secret out just yet. So I hope you guys enjoy the Charlie interview, and I'll get back to you guys in a little bit. Hey, how's it going, Charlie?
Hey, good, man.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast, brother. I greatly appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I'm glad to be here.
For everybody out there listening, this is Charlie Eschbach, and he's with The Undercoats. Tell me a bit about your band, brother.
Well, we started about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it was just going to be a recording project. I've been doing publishing for a long time, and I figured we'd kind of get something started again. So we got a group of about maybe 10 or 12 songs, started recording them, and I was originally going to sing the music, but then I ran across a songwriter, and we started collaborating on some things. The first record got recorded. The singer didn't want to stick around, so we decided to record a second project, and this one we brought on a new drummer and a new keyboard player. I mean, a keyboard player, and then a female singer, Melissa. And from that point forward, it seemed to be gelling really nicely. So we recorded another bunch of songs and got a CD out there and kept moving forward.
Where can people find your music at if they want to check it out?
Well, they can check it out at a lot of places, but you can go to all the normal outlets to Spotify and all those places to find us. You can also look us up on Facebook at the Undercoats, Facebook/ The Undercoats, or you can search anywhere on the web. If you just type in The Undercoats, it'll come up. The name of the record is Static Symphony.
Right on, man. I had seen that you guys had got stuff on a soundtrack for a movie. What movie is that?
Yeah, the movie is called Dust Nuggets. It starred Eric Roberts and Richard Picardo. It's a movie about, theoretically, it's about a band but it's more about the manager and what kind of psychological and drug abuse problem she's had through managing a band. And it's a little bit of like a David Lynch-ish kind of psychological thriller, if you want to put it in that light.
Okay. And where can they, is it released yet? Can people find it on the Amazon and stuff?
Yeah, with all the, the happenings that have happened recently, obviously a lot of the music industry is kind of shut down. This was originally supposed to go to the film festivals, now it's on Amazon Prime. So you could just literally go to your TV and click on Amazon Prime. Prime is the app, or you can go on your phone and just look at it that way through Amazon Prime.
That is very awesome, man. Now, I know I've known you for a little while, man. You've been in the past.
Oh boy! Well, if you want to go,
I know, it's kind of a long list.
Yeah, well, if you want to go really far back, the first band that was like kind of semi-successful, believe it or not, was a '50s tribute band. It wasn't my band. Yeah, I was playing everything that somebody asked me to play, but their set list consisted of probably about 300 or 400 songs. So it was a massive amount of songs that they could pull out at any time. And as easy as music was back then, I mean, there really was like really only 4 or 5 chords that made up almost every song. It was more like you had to remember all the keys and what harmonies you were singing. And it was a big challenge for a young musician to learn all those songs and keep them in your back pocket. That was the first band. And then in bands like that, I was also in a cover band that was like an 80s cover band. But in bands like that, I pretty much did what I was supposed to do to kind of, make people feel good and like the songs and play them like the record. I was songwriting the whole time.
Okay.
And as I'm listening to all these great musicians that, you know, I'm playing their songs, I started figuring out a way to kind of express myself and kind of say, well, this is my song and these are my influences, and eventually started recording them over time. The first original band that I actually played and recorded was a band called The Standard. And Shane Rosen locally was in that band, Chad Maurer and Roger Sinestri, Steve Hilbert. And we were like a big potpourri of everything you could imagine. I mean, everything from prog rock to country was mixed together. And
oh, wow.
Very unusual band. and it's very, very bizarre. So did it have a really good sound? The jury's still out on that one. But it was a lot of fun. You know, we played a few places and had some fun with it. And then
right on.
I think from that point forward, it was all, it was mostly all original bands that I wanted to do.
Okay. I know briefly in our talks in the past, I'm 99% sure it was you that told me about B Records from the Reading area. Am I correct by saying that?
Yeah, there was a record label back in the early 60s called B Records. A friend of mine that I actually played in a band with said, hey, I want to introduce you to somebody. And I said, okay, sure. So we just went in town. Into a very, very unsecured location, and met this guy that, you know, was much older than the average musician, and he was the guy that owned B Records at one point.
And you said, if I remember correctly, you were saying that there was a few hits that actually came out of B Records.
Yeah, I mean they put out a lot of different music. I think they actually probably started in the 50s. I think the guy's name was Grover that owned it, from what I can remember.
Okay.
They were right on Schuylkill Avenue, 600 block of Schuylkill Avenue. I know I can name some of the people. Hermie Herman, the Blue Rays, Johnny Prophet, Don Ellis, Bunny Sigler, Earl Jenkins. These are all names just that are in my mental Rolodex over time, and I mean, there was a lot of releases. You can look them up too. If you just, there's a great website called Discogs, which is DISCOGS.com. It has almost every release ever, and I'm sure they're listed in there somewhere.
What was the site name again? We kind of cut out there for a brief moment.
Yeah, no problem. The name of the website, that it just shows every record that's ever been released, pretty much, as a disc. Discogs, DISCOGS.com. So Discogs, very unusual name, but it does feature a lot of things in there.
All right, and it like B Records, just BEE, like
BEE Records. Yep.
All right. So besides music on this program, I always like to throw in some other things too. It is the Bartenders Podcast. So, back, if you did drink, or if you currently drink, what is your go-to?
Oh, geez. I tell you, alcohol has been a very interesting experience as a musician. I would say that if there's a drink that I probably like the most, it's Sambuca.
Sambuca, okay. For me personally, that's one of those things. I'm not an anisette guy, so I kind of tend to avoid that.
I got you. Like I said, I don't drink very much, but if there's something that would say, yeah, I'll take that.
And other things I've mixed in with the show too, food. So right now it's summertime. What is one summertime food you really enjoy?
Well, I just ate wings today. Holy mackerel! I could eat wings all the time. I would say that, you know, probably pizza is my favorite food, but I would think that wings, because of the summertime and cookouts and stuff like that.
All right, right on, man. I'm a burger and dog kind of guy when it comes to the summertime foods.
There you go. Yeah. Good stuff.
Do you have anything in the works right now that you're working on? I know you said you just got out of the studio today.
Yeah, I was doing a session earlier today. I took a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, I'd like to do a vocal session, and it's a very unusual soundtrack. Maybe you could pull a couple guys together that could do some backing tracks. And I said, sure. So tell me a little bit about it. He told me about the recording. There were three songs that he wanted to do, a very cinematic kind of songs. And I pulled together a couple friends of mine that would probably lend really well to this. One was John Bailey. You probably know who he is. Yep. He's nicknamed Hambone locally. And my friend Randy Skakowski.
Okay.
And we went over, them not knowing anything about it, and both being pretty good seasoned vocalists. They didn't know anything about the recording on what genre or anything, but I pieced these guys together knowing what it was going to be like. So the first song that we did was all of us singing in unison, but because we have different tones, I figured this would be a good combination of people. And then the second one, we did a very similar thing, but the third one was very unusual. The third one was a song that was a chain gang song.
Okay.
So the guy, I should tell you, the guy that actually ran the session is Robert Riley. If you remember the band 78 West from back in the day.
Yes.
He's the lead singer.
Okay.
He kind of skedaddled to Maine a long time ago, but then he was back in town. He said, we got to do something together. So we did this project. And Rob's got a great voice. He's got a really good voice. And he asked me to put together some guys. We went over, we knocked it out in about 2 hours with some pretty cool tracks, and that one song just gets to me. It's like, it's a very unusual song where he had a chain gang recording of people singing on the chain gang, and he said, I want to emulate this, but I don't want to use the words. I'm going to use my own words, and I want to kind of make it our own, fit it in within the structure of the song. So he came up with, he had these lyrics, and we said, okay, let's try it. So we did a lot of really unique recording techniques where we would have two mics that were perpendicular to each other, and we would stand at different points of the room. So we would change position after we'd record the first one, and then we would stack these recordings together. So, you know, you can imagine like five of us standing around singing this line, and then everybody changing position but recording again.
Now, oh, wow.
These vocals are coming through the microphones at different angles, and now it's a true, beautiful spectrum of stereo, where you have the voice and you don't really know quite where it's coming from, but you hear it, you hear the tone on this side, it's kind of phasing in and out, so it creates like all this weird ambience that was kind of unusual too. So some really cool things that, you know, that they applied recording technique wise, and of course, Rob's a really good songwriter.
Do you have any advice for any younger musicians out there? I know you've been in the game for a while as a musician. I mean, do you have any tips for you know, just people playing, what they can do, you know, if they want to further anything with music or just have fun with it?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of good cover guitar players and bass player drummers that, you know, just play covers all the time, and they play them so well and they're so good at what they do. But for me, it was finding me as an artist and what I wanted to do. Now, that could be backing somebody else up. You know, you could say, you know, I've done that plenty of times. Mm-hmm. But I think at one point, if you're going to really express yourself, the only true way to do that is in your own words and your own music. That's the only way to do it. Everything else, you're just pretty much, you know, tracing what somebody else's thought was. And I would much rather have, as an advice to somebody that's starting, is just write it. Even if it's bad, even if it's horrible, if it's like the worst possible lyric and the worst possible two chords you could imagine, just write it and get it out there, because people will tell you that you're bad. And that's good. You want to be the lowest rung on the ladder, because that's the only way you're going to get better. If you're praised out of the box, like, boy, what a great musician, you're just going to think that you've hit your peak. I always said that I want to be the worst player in any band that I'm in, because I think that makes me gravitate to be better at what I do.
That's some pretty sound logical advice there.
Yeah, thanks.
Definitely. Our next question for you. What was one of your favorite places that you played?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a couple. I'm going to go back to the standard days when we had this really bizarre band together. One of the coolest things we did was we played at West Virginia University, and it was for a some big event. I know Love Seat Mom and Jump was there, and there was a whole bunch of really well-known regional cover bands there, and we were going out playing originals. Now, it wasn't really the gig, although there was tons and tons of people at this gig, but what was really interesting about it is that it was as college as it gets. I mean, it was crazy.
Now, what year are we talking about, roughly? Like
probably 90, 92, 90. 93, 92, somewhere in that range.
All right.
Maybe 94, 93. I think somewhere around 93. And it was their big, spring break kind of thing or whatever it was. And it was a party, man. Giant beer truck in the middle of, 2,000, 3,000 people.
Oh, wow. Wow. That definitely sounds like it would be a nice party to be at.
Yeah, and they weren't charging for the beer either.
That's even better.
That is pretty crazy.
All right, another question I like to throw at musicians every once in a while. Have you ever had an awkward moment on stage?
Sure. You brought two of them up. I have to tell both of them because they're both really great. The first one was I was playing with a band. My friend Vinny and Larry had this classic rock band. And every possible cliche classic rock band song you could imagine, we were doing it pretty well. And we played a place in Hallam, which was called the Tourist Inn at the time. And we went on stage, and in the middle of me playing a guitar solo, I put my one knee forward to kind of lean in for the solo and, do a little showing off, I guess, or whatever at the time.
Yeah.
And as I leaned in, it was perfect timing. My pants split from the center of my crotch all the way down to my knee.
Oh, man.
It just completely split down. And there was nothing to be hidden at that point. And it was pretty crazy because the stage is about maybe 3 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And, there's certain things that are at eye level.
Yep.
So, couldn't miss that show.
Did you just keep the show going though?
Yeah, we got a lot of duct tape and tried to staple the pants back together and did it again. So
that is awesome. Yeah. That is awesome.
It was crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, that was one of them. The other one was we played a gig, and this was a standard gig too, and it seemed like there was all kinds of crazy events that happened with them. We got booked at a venue. And now consider that we played everything from prog rock to, with country leads and weird things all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was mostly in the prog rock category. And we got booked in a night. We went to this venue. We set up. And we started counting an unbelievably high inventory of cowboy hats in the place.
Wow.
And we're looking around and we're like, wow, that's kind of weird. Why is all that? Was there like some kind of cowboy convention going on? What is going on? And then we realized that the front sign actually said it was country night. Now, when you're opening up and our first song is going to be like YYZ by Rush, you're probably not going to get those line dancers, those country line dancers.
Yeah.
So we had a very interesting look at us when we started doing Limelight and weird Rush songs that nobody's heard of. Funny.
Oh man, I can't even imagine what that'd be. That would be like going into that scenario.
Yeah. And that's the same thing. Like you were saying, like what advice I would do to anybody: just do it, just play, just get out there, play, write, do whatever you want to do, and the good will always triumph the bad. Over time, the bad is just going to wear off of you, and you're going to be your own person, and that's who you're going to present. So
what were some of the music influences that you had that kind of guided you into playing?
Well, I think the Beatles have always been there. Elvis Costello, ELO, and Jeff Lynne. McCartney, of course, is a big one. But I think what happened with me is just like every guitar player in the 80s, you almost couldn't get away from the Eddie Van Halen, Yngwie Malmsteen, all those guys. And you had to like incorporate something of what they were doing into what you did. And I wasn't finding any happiness learning that stuff. I really wasn't finding like, do I really want to do this? Do I want to use all eight fingers at the same time?
And, yeah.
Put your mouse and notes in there. And something happened to me with a record a long time ago that I picked up, and it was a very unusual title for a record called Little Head. But the name of the band, the name of the artist was John Hyatt. And when I listened to that record the first time I heard it, it was very quirky. It was cool and it was different. But he was an incredible lyricist. So in the vein of like what I was listening to, like Elvis Costello and all those guys, I would have to say that he was the guy that turned me and changed my songwriting style. He made me go from focusing on melody and chords first to focusing on lyrics first. And I think that over time, listening to John Hyatt, John Prine, and those kind of guys, I realized that lyrics are probably as, if not more important than the music. So almost from that, those 5 or 6 years of listening to John Hyatt, I started coming at songwriting a lot differently, where I would write the story and the music and the music last, the story first and lyrics first. Now that's very unusual because most people pick up their guitar, sit at the piano and start hammering out a melody.
Yeah.
And I found that for me personally, it was more like I would have to cram the lyric into a melody rather than just let the lyric breathe and say what you want to say and then figure the music around it. And that, for me, it worked better and it actually challenged me. It made me write better songs.
All right. Here's another random question for you. In your opinion, what do you think is one of the worst songs played on the airwaves?
Oh,
so, I mean, throughout the generations.
You're going to make me throw somebody under the bus. Here we go.
I see, Tiptoeing Through the Tulips, I think, for me, is probably up there.
you know, for me, I think it wasn't necessarily a band, but it was a sound. Here's a great example. In the 80s, things were becoming more canned, where they were fake and they sounded fake. And I think, here's an example. Hall & Oates were great from Sarah Smiles and Abandoned Luncheonette and all those records. And then when they hit the 80s in Big Bam Boom, it was a producer's game. You had a sound like the modern music. And even though the songs were pretty good, the producer has to take all the credit at that point. And there were stuff in there that stuff off of that record that really wasn't very organic. It had the biggest hits they probably ever had, and the most on one record. But holy mackerel, that time frame just eliminated good songwriting. Yeah. I mean, it eliminated.
Speaking of bad songs, there was a song out of the 80s I remember, and you'll never hear it on the airwaves. Fishheads.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Fishheads, yeah, Fishheads, Roly Poly Fishheads.
Listen, I had a collection of Dr. Demento records that most Dr. Demento fans would be envious of. I mean, I have a lot of them. And all that stuff was great. I would listen to the Dr. Demento show all the time. And when I guess it was WZZO played it at, like, I think it was midnight on Friday night. And this is going back a while. So I don't know that you're going to be able to stump me on most of those songs.
Well, I remember back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, back when Y102 would do their all requests on the weekends. Yeah. And I'd always call in and mess with Chuck. I'd say, did you get Roly Poly Fishheads on the airway yet? And he'd just sigh and go, no, not yet.
Yeah, I would say that was a pretty bad one. I mean, in the novelty song.
Yeah.
Boy, there's a million. There was one, I forget what his name was. It was Billy something. It was called Shaving Cream.
I think I vaguely remember it. Vaguely.
Yeah. They slipped in like a play on words in the song, and it was very tongue in cheek and very quirky, and just the sound of the song got you kind of nauseated.
So what's your favorite kind of guitar to play?
Telecaster.
All right.
Can't do it.
That quick, simple, straight to the point right there. All right. Yeah. My final question for the interview. As a musician, is there anything on your bucket list or still aspire to do, even though you've been doing it for so long, Besides like just evolving, like any place you'd like to play, any style or music you'd like to create, anything along those lines that you'd like to do?
Well, boy, that's a good question. I mean, I have like people that, boy, I would love to like co-write with and stuff like that. But I think if you're looking at the bigger picture of what I want to do, I just want to leave a catalog of songs that, you know, as a musician, my kids can look back on and say, hey, look, he really wrote some good tunes here, and he really was focused on getting it done. That not necessarily that they become musicians, but that whatever they want to do, they see that, hey, there is an end product that you can get. You know, you can physically hold a CD in my hand. Maybe you won't know what it is, you know, another generation from now. And I think it's some kind of weird, you know, format. But I think, you know, in the internet age, all this stuff is going to be documented for all the world to see for as long as it wants to be out there. And I think that shows that you can at least do something. I think if there was another ultimate goal, make money, man. Because, you know, the weird thing that has happened to music is that in live shows, the money hasn't changed. The money is still the same amount of money for live shows, and in some cases a little bit more. But on the publishing end of things, the money has changed. I mean, it's died. I mean, there's still money to make here and there, and you kind of get your good nibbles and things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, it's a much different animal now.
And I noticed that too, especially with like a lot of the newer hip hop songs and stuff like that. You know, you go to look at everything that went into that one song, and you'll see like 40 names on it.
Yeah.
And everybody's getting that little cut of it. So I can definitely see where you're coming from in that aspect of things.
That also ties into the thing I mentioned earlier that happened in the 80s. Once it became a producer's game, where producers were kind of taking over. Now in the 60s, and a producer came in, you know, it was all like new technology. You needed a producer to kind of handle the hard stuff that you didn't know as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
But when it got to the 80s and technology started to catch up, and now it's far exceeded how it's almost easier to make a song today than it is to write a song in the 60s. Like, it's so much easier to just make one and it sounds great. I mean, there are programs that you don't even need a musician.
Mm-hmm.
You can just simply write everything. You can even recreate a voice if you wanted to, and recreate words. So there's tons of things that you can do that aren't even like organically created. And I think what that's done is that's changed the game from starting with the root of it, you know, a really good song, a really good message, good lyrics, good melody, good voice on the record. It's changed that game to none of those things and being produced. So now those things become second fiddle to everything else. And that's not good. I'd love to see that change again. I would love to see more organic music come back.
I definitely noticed that. I'd say it's going back... About 14 years ago, there was a DJ named Skrillex that came out, and he started doing a different style of music in basically like the techno kind of sounds and stuff like that in the dance. He was doing everything from his laptop, and I noticed nowadays with a lot of the concerts, it's a lot of DJ stuff and a lot of guys doing like the creating beats on stage and stuff like that in front of people. And I've definitely seen that the younger generation definitely, how can I put it, flock to that more.
Yeah, and you know, I think he's from, isn't that isn't he from LA? He's like a DJ,
yeah,
record producer, musician. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. I think LA and New York were the driving forces behind that. Nashville was probably the last standing. last standing of those, which, you know, they didn't want to give it up to the producer. Eventually, I think they did in some aspects, but I think it moved from the outside in. And man, boy, I mean, it's very unusual to hear a song without any heart and soul in it.
Yeah, yeah, I can definitely relate to that with today's music.
And you know, I don't care if it's metal, country, yeah, or polka. You know, there's something in any of those genres that just make it different. You know, you can compare any two bands and say, yeah, this is more organic than the other one in any genre. It's just that I think that's just getting less of that. and I wish it would come back. I think it does. I think the pendulum does swing back.
My fingers are crossed for it. I definitely am hoping. Now, I said that was going to be my last question for you, but I'm going to throw one more on you here. Best concert you've ever been to?
Boy, this is going to probably shock you, but there were two that I think are some of my favorite ones that I was at. I seen Sting on the Dream of the Blue Turtles tour. And I think that was the most electrifying musician fronted concert that I was at, where you could look at any of the musicians on the stage and go, wow, there's some really amazing talent. Branford Marsalis, Omar Hakim, Darryl Jones, I mean, all those guys, Kenny Kirkland on keyboards, they were all tremendous, tremendous musicians. And like from a musician standpoint, I think that was the most thrilling one. I think the one that made me just realize, like, not how great musicians were, but how loud they could be and still be tremendously good was Dream Theater. When I seen them, I was like, holy Moses. There's not, if you don't get some kind of jolt out of this band, boy, I don't know what else it is.
Well, Charlie, it's been great interviewing you and having you on the podcast. And I'm sure we'll do this again, maybe in a few weeks if you like.
Yeah, it sounds great, man, Mark. I always like hearing from you.
All right, brother. Well, you take it easy. Enjoy the rest of your summer and stay safe during the quarantine, my friend. And
thanks,
no problem.
Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime, brother. That was Charlie Eschbach from The Undercoats. Make sure to check out his music. You can check it out on Spotify, Bandcamp. Also, make sure Dust Nuggets on Amazon. They laid down some tracks for that too as well. And thank you guys for sticking with us here on the Bartender's Jukebox. You just heard the Charlie Eschbach interview from The Undercoats. And thank you guys for listening to my podcast. You can always support the Bartender's Jukebox. Go to that Facebook page. Make sure to hit that like, follow, and all that good stuff. Please be sure to share my podcast with all your wonderful friends out there that appreciate music, life, and all things bar, jukebox, music, whatever. You know what I mean? So I hope you guys become a little more interactive with the Facebook page. I know I'm just getting up and going with this here. So thank you guys again. And like I always say, stay thirsty for music, my friends.